Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
This is what I call freedom. Well, I want to say, I want to tell you, I want to say it. When you can do what you want to do and go where you want to go and live where you want to live and love who you want. You wanna join? Well, 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 that's freedom. Yeah, yeah, freedom. Yes, sir. When you can learn what you wanna learn and read what you wanna read and write what you wanna write.
All right, everybody, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We may be having some problems. I totally hope not, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It seems to be okay. Let's see if we can do this. All righty.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, everybody. And we're having some difficulties here. This is what happens when you're doing internet radio. I'm hearing myself, and I have to because I have to adjust this thing here. All right. Okay. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. And my guest is Maria, Boston College, living happy inside and out on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's going to be a blast, folks. It really is. Hopefully it will. you know. And it's been a blast all week, actually. And I've had some great guests on the show. I hope you guys tuned in and listened and had a great time, because this show is all about having fun and great time to talk about times. It's about talk. I mean, it's a great big old guitar on my Blog Talk Radio website. But this is a talk show. I hope no one thinks that it's musical, even though I do play music on the show, you know, once in a while, as you might have heard, especially at the beginning at sometimes and during break. But anyway, welcome to the George Waldo Jr. Show. It is such a great day in the city of Chicago, and I am enjoying summer so immensely. And folks, I hope you are too. I hope you're enjoying summer just as no matter where you are in the world, just enjoy it. You know, it's going to be over before you know it, because, hey, wow, it's July. July means one thing, that winter is coming. You know, forget fall. I mean, just go straight to winter, all right? Winter is coming, so enjoy this weather, man. Get out there and do something, you know, exercise, walk around your neighborhood. You don't have to go to a gym. You don't need a gym membership. Why join some stuffy gym when you can enjoy nature at its fullest, at its best, especially when you're having great, great weather like we are in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois? We've had some storms and a lot of rain, but and a lot of people were flooded out, and we have to, our hearts go out to those people. And no, but generally, I mean, if you're okay and everything's fine and you've been to the doctor and all that kind of thing, and hey, get out there and enjoy yourself. Enjoy nature, you know, get some exercise, you know, and because that will help you to live longer. It will prolong your life. Enjoy what there is to enjoy, because, you know, we're all going to die. So do as much as you can to enjoy life before you die, you know. And if you can, you know, leave something behind. There are so many people who die, leave the earth. I mean, people die every day, all the time. And so many people die without a legacy. So many people die without leaving something behind that those of us who are still living can remember them by. So what I'm trying to say is, leave something behind. Just don't die. Leave something behind that other people can remember you by and say, hey, wow, Rosie was here. Peter was here. Michael was here. You know, David was here. You know, leave something so people can, you know, remember you, have a legacy, so to speak. I mean, you don't have to be a millionaire or a billionaire or own a lot of hotels or anything. You can just be a nice person, a nice guy, a nice individual, of some sorts. But, you know, just be nice to one another out there. Being nice is so easy. Nice people have to do one thing. Nice people have to do one thing. They have to avoid those people out here who are trying to scam them just because they're nice, just because they're gullible, they're giving, they're loving, they're caring. You got people out here who will try to play on your feelings for being nice. Some people would try to play on your feelings, and that's not good. All righty. And that's not good at all.
Man whose presidency would eventually end in disgrace with his impeachment for obstruction of justice. After firing the person running the investigation into him at the Department of Justice. But here's what I want you to know. We got through that tumultuous time.
Welcome back to AM Joy. It was the Hillary Clinton her supporters have been waiting for. Clinton unplugged at her alma mater, comparing Donald Trump's win to that of former President Richard Nixon, who had just taken office in 1969 when Clinton became the first student to give the Wellesley commencement address. This week offered even more signs that the current president has tried to interfere with the FBI's investigation of Russia's meddling in the 2016 election, an investigation that's now looking at Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as a person of interest. Among several bombshell reports in the Washington Post, just in the last few days, came news that Trump made separate appeals to the Director of National Intelligence and to the Director of the National Security Agency, urging them both to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion between his campaign and the Russians. Both men reportedly refused to comply. Joining me now is Evan Siegfried, Republican strategist and author of GOP GPS, Richard Painter, former chief White House ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush, equal rights attorney Tamara Holder, Paul Butler, professor of law at Georgetown, and MSNBC justice and security analyst Matthew Miller. Thank you all for being here. So I want to go through and I want to start, Paul Butler, with the definition of obstruction of justice. And this is from Cornell Law School. It says that obstruction of justice is defined as whoever corruptly or by threats or force or by any threatening letter or communication influences, obstructs, or impedes or endeavors to influence, instruct, or impede the due administration of justice. And it says persons are charged under this statute based on allegations that a defendant intended to interfere with an official proceeding by doing things such as destroying evidence or interfering with the duties of jurors or court officers. In your view, does Donald Trump doing the following things, and this is element three for my producer, sorry I'm jumping around, asking Jim Comey to pledge his loyalty to him, then firing Jim Comey with the Jared Kushner's push to do so after he didn't do it, asking the DNI to certify there's no collusion, asking the NSA director to certify there's no collusion with him in Russia, and then reaching out to Flynn to say stay strong when Flynn is a person of interest. Does that look like obstruction of justice according to the statute, Paul Butler?
As a prosecutor, I'm looking at a pattern of conduct. Corruptly impede an official proceeding. Corruptly means you know that what you were doing was wrong. Well, you know what you're doing is wrong when you're meeting with the FBI director and you ask the vice president and the attorney general to leave the room so you can have a private conversation about give my boy Mike Flynn a break. You look at a pattern of conduct where, again, you reach out to the intelligence directors to give Flynn a break, and they say, no, we can't call off the FBI. And then you go to the FBI director. He says, no, I can't do that, and I can't show you any loyalty. And then you fire that director. And then, Joy, after all of that, you know Flynn is under investigation. You give him a call, and you say words to the effect of, man, I know the feds are after you, but keep your head up. The struggle is real. Give me a break. I've seen obstruction of justice convictions on less evidence than this.
And Matthew Miller, you also have sort of extraordinary information coming out of some of the officials who were the sort of recipients of these overtures from Donald Trump. Admiral Mike Rogers addressed the staff of the National Security Agency. This is unusual for information like this to come out, unusual for him to do this full sort of briefing that would become public. This was in The Observer. Admiral Rogers took the unusual step of addressing the entire NSA workforce to tell them what transpired with the president. Rogers reportedly admitted that President Trump asked him to discredit the FBI and James Comey, which the admiral flatly refused to do. And he stated, there is no question that we, meaning the NSA, have evidence of election involvement and questionable contacts with the Russians. That's extraordinary, Matthew Miller.
It is extraordinary, and we've seen the president obviously call the director of the FBI. We've seen him call the director of the NSA. We've seen him call Dan Coats, the director of National Intelligence. I think the big question about other people who might have called, you know, two people who haven't talked about their interactions with the president yet with respect to this case. One is Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, and one is Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. It's hard for me to believe that with the president being so angry about how this case was being handled, that he was calling the people in the intelligence community, that he also wasn't calling Jeff Sessions, his friend, maybe his closest ally in the administration, and complained to him about how the investigation was handled. And that is key because Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein obviously both signed off on the firing of Jim Comey. So I think one of the questions we're really going to have to ask, and it's going to fall to Congress to ask Sessions and Rosenstein when they're up there in their regular appearances, what conversations did they have with the president? What conversations did they have with other people in the White House? And if he was complaining to them about the way Comey was handling the investigation before he fired it, I think that is another piece of evidence that goes to his intent in making that decision.
And Richard Painter, you know, David Frum, you know, I was on with him on The Last Word the other night, and he made what I think is an important point, that we are framing this as legal versus illegal rather than adding the question of whether or not these things are even baseline ethical for a presidential administration, regardless of whether you're able to prove the crime of obstruction of justice, that as a political and ethical matter, these are problematic. You, as former White House Ethics Counsel, would you have ever authorized authorized a president of the United States to even do one of these things, namely usher the attorney general out of the room so that the president could have a private conversation with the FBI director who's investigating his campaign.
Wow, I'm looking at the, this is astonishing, bitch. I mean, as I've said yesterday on the show, folks, I mean, Donald Trump, it's always something coming out of the White House, the Oval Office, on Donald Trump. Now, Trump's lawyer rages, and I'm quoting, "Watch your back, bitch." Now, who is he referring to? Pardon my language. I'm just reading what is up here on Huffington Post. Trump lawyer rages, "Watch your back, bitch." And I'm going to get into the article in seconds, but I'm just stunned that if you've seen Donald Trump's lawyers, if you heard them defend him, you would be able to tell right away that these guys are some thug lawyers, gangster lawyers. They represent the mafia, which is in the White House. These are, you know, I mean, every gangster organization, any legitimate organization, thug organization, they're going to have their own lawyers. So does the Donald Trump team. And these lawyers, and I've seen them. I've listened to some of their interviews, which some of these lawyers are the same as politicians. Politician, they don't answer the question. They do not answer a direct question with a yes or a no, or they just don't answer the question. They'll talk all around the question, beside it, up, but they will not answer a direct question. And in some cases, if you ask them a direct question, a question that they should know the answer to, they get pissed off. They get upset. I mean, they get angry that you're asking them a question that is pertaining to their jobs and more than likely the American people would like to know the answer also. So, you know, this is a new revelation. There's something always coming out of the Trump administration. And Trump, this guy should not be in office, man. He and his thug lawyers, his mafia team in the White House, destroying and dismantling and disrespecting the White House, they should be thrown out of there. These people have no business in the White House, but they're going to go all out to protect Trump because they're just kissing his ass. I mean, these are people who are loyal to Trump. I mean, Trump does. If you've heard enough about Trump and know enough about Donald Trump, then you know Donald Trump expects loyalty from his minions, from his ass kissers, from his flunkies, and that's all they are. And they're proud to be flunkies, Republicans. You probably have heard that Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, a lifelong Republican, decided to leave the party. He said the other day, I think on Stephen Colbert's late night show, that he is not a Republican anymore. He's done with it because of this Trump administration. He's done with it. He's a well-known face. He's on MSNBC. He's a talk show host. He's been a talk show host on MSNBC for years. Before that, he was a senator. Not a senator, but a representative in Congress. But he has sworn his allegiance. He's no longer Republican. He is an independent. So there you go, folks. Republicans are leaving the Republican Party in droves. The only reason why you've heard about Marlboro is because he's a famous person. He's on television every day. He's on television every night. I mean, with his former wife, you know, and they have always been critics of Donald Trump, really vocal critics of Donald Trump. And they've said some things that I totally agree pertaining to Donald Trump and his behavior and the White House, how they are just defacing the White House with their gangster style way that they're doing things. And that's awful. But I want to say this also. Other people are leaving the Republican Party, and because of this. So I do think come November 2018, there's going to be a tsunami coming into Congress. It's going to wipe a lot of them, including Paul Ryan. These guys are doing everything they can. The majority of the people around America, Republicans and Democrats, want to see Donald Trump thrown out of office. But the people in power, who are Republicans, they know it, they hear it, but they will not do anything about it. They will not do anything about his behavior. Okay, so people are leaving. Actually, people are leaving both parties in droves, Democrats and Republicans. I left the Democratic Party a long time ago. Please do not call me a Democrat. Please do not call me a bleeding heart liberal. I'm none of those. I've handed in my blue card. I'm none of that. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. As I've stated and said before, both parties make me want to puke. You know, because they're both, have their ways of trying to screw the American people, and I don't like it. It's just awesome. Okay, Trump lawyer, his name is Mark Kasowitz, something to that effect. He threatens a stranger in emails. He says, watch your back. The string of profanity-laced emails were sent in response to emails with the subject line, resign now. This story has been updated from a response from a spokesman for Mark Kasowitz. All right, who the hell is Mark Kasowitz? I'm thinking that's the lawyer. That's one of Trump's lawyers. Okay, it says right here, Mark Kasowitz, President Trump's personal attorney on the Russia case, threatened a stranger in a string of profanity-laden emails Wednesday night. The man, a retired public relations professional in the Western United States who asked not to be identified, sent the lawyer an email with a subject line, resign now. I mean, this is what I just said. Now Trump's lawyer, his lawyer is threatening someone else to resign. These are crooked lawyers. They're thug lawyers who are representing a thug president, a criminal president. Someone who should be thrown the hell out of office. However, Congress will not do their jobs. The Republicans in Congress, they're aiding and abetting Trump. They will not do their jobs, and it's bad. It is really sad. It is really sad. All right. Okay. The George Wilder Jr. Show is on the air. Hi. Are you on?
Hello.
You on the George Wilder Jr. Show? Hello.
Hi. This is Morris Sweeney, your guest for the night. How are you?
I'm fine. You're a little early, but that's fine. That's okay. And go ahead.
No, you know what? I didn't want to be late because my time was 7:30 and you wanted to call me to call you a little before. I'm Eastern and you are Central. And it's 7:24 on my schedule. Anytime you're ready, I am here waiting for you, George. So keep going with your monologue.
Oh, okay. I mean, no, it's okay. We can get on with the interview. All right, Don, you're going to be talking about, give us a little bit of your bio.
Oh, gosh, my bio. I am known as the ambassador of happiness. Mm-hmm. And I'm a writer. I'm a podcaster. I'm an international speaker. I've just traveled to over 60 countries. Just came back last night from 21 days in Italy, which was more like having fun. And what I do, George, and why your show appealed to me is because you made several great comments. One is that you're making the world a better place one show at a time. And the other is that hate has no home here. And I'm busy trying to make the world a better place one thought, one question, one story at a time. And also, I look for ways for people to find what unites us rather than what divides us, always with the intention of creating a better world and the advancement of the human race. So that is just a quick review of what I do.
Oh, wow. That's great. That sounds beautiful. Yeah, we try to make the world a better place because, and it doesn't always take money. It can take a little time, a little of your effort to make someone who deserves to be, happy, you know. So it's all about making the world a better place. And one show at a time, one book at a time, one story at a time. And that's my motto for the show. And we stick behind it. And I'm looking here that the name of your book or what are you going to be talking about? Love Happy Inside and Out? Living Happy.
Oh, Living Happy. Inside yeah. Out. That is my mantra. And also I have a series of books on the art of happiness. And I even have an e-course that's Foundations of Happiness. And I think as each one of us finds our own happiness internally, we help contribute to a better world and better lives for us all.
Yeah, I totally agree because I think there's a lot of unhappy people in the world. And one of the things about this show, I try to have it a spirited type of show. So when people listen, you know, they can feel be a little bit more uplifting within themselves and a little bit more positive and maybe go on once the show is over to continue to be a positive person inside and out, as you've alluded to, living happy inside and out.
That's for sure. And the other thing, too, is I always look to remind people that they are a source and a centerpiece of influencing others around them. And most people don't realize that their lives count, they matter, their thoughts, their words, their deeds, the way they comport themselves helps other people see the world in a different way. And most of us, I think, feel disempowered. And I love to remind people that they are very powerful in ways they didn't even realize.
Yeah, I try to do that too, but you're the professional. I'm just sitting here learning from you.
It's funny, you're saying I'm the professional. What I do, believe it or not, is something that I thought about when I was very young, and I waited until I had lots of life experience, and then there's no such thing as a degree in happiness. You don't get a university PhD for, this person's happy, but I've used all of my travels, all of my volunteer, my work experience, and so many other things as a means of finding ways for people to see what unites us. And it's amazing how many things we all look for in life and how similar they are to one another. For example, we all want to feel a certain amount of freedom. And we want to know that we've got some healthy relationships with a little less drama. We want some peace of mind. We want to feel like we have purpose and fulfillment, and we want to feel confident. So those are the things that I look to key in on and help other people get there so that they can individually help contribute to a better world. So it's a lot of life experience, not so much the university degrees that would call me the, PhD professional.
Okay. Why do you think so many people are unhappy?
Oh, I could give you my answer, is that most people end up doing what they're told or following the lead of others who may or may not have their best interest in mind. I mean, think about we grow up, our parents tell us how to feed ourselves and what to do and what not to do. Teachers in school tell us where to sit and they tell us what's important to be graded on and what's not important. We get a little older, we find out that we're working for a boss. And oftentimes, while we're taking cues and directions from everybody else, we're sometimes not giving place or space to maybe things that are important to us or values that we have or even skills that we have that we want to develop or talents. And so when we start to cultivate things that are important to us and develop ourselves, we feel more confident. We feel more purposeful. We don't have to compete negatively with other people. We're a little bit more creative. We come up with new solutions and we feel a little bit more authentic rather than copycats of somebody else.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that assessment. I'm basically what you're saying is if you want to be happy, become your own leader.
Yes. Instead of blaming your trouble on somebody else, which most of us are taught to do. We're always like, oh, such and such a thing happened to me when I was young, or life gave me a bad turn. And then we start living in that mental space and we have a victim mentality rather than one that says, you know what? Maybe I didn't always have it easy, or maybe I've got a challenge here, but how can I turn it around and use it for good? And that's something I've studied my entire life. George, you know how many people have become way makers, have become inventors, have become icons, have become leaders, all because they took issues and challenges and became better through them and ended up becoming leaders in their own right that showed other people the way?
Yeah, I can speak for myself on that. I was tired of following other people. And I knew that I had it in me to be my own leader, to be my own boss, to be my own, you know, just to work for myself and stop doing what other people were telling me to do. And along down the road, people were coming to me for, you know, advice and leadership. And I was, you know, I was there to give it to them. So I think you have something there. It is... people have to take charge of their own lives. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. A lot of people actually need someone to direct them because it's a part of them. It's a part of their DNA that they're just not leaders and they need other people to show them the way.
Right. And yet, you know what happens as we start stepping out on our own and developing ourselves or growing up, let's say, emotionally, socially, or whatever skills we want to develop, we end up being way showers for other people who say, wait a minute, maybe I could do that too. We become inspirers for other people. And we end up giving other people that idea that they too can be better, bigger, and show forth their best self. And if you think, all right, you know what? I was listening to you before I called in at 6:23 your time, and I was listening to some of the things you were talking about in Washington. A lot of people are upset. There's a lot of, I'll tell you, George, there are people in Europe that feel very much like people in America. They're feeling like they don't have a voice or that government does things to them. And what's happening is that they're all saying, wait a minute, I have my own voice. How can I be a better, how can I use my voice? How can I use it for good? How can I be a person that is a responsible adult that starts expecting good things of myself and good things of other people? And I'm not going to tell you it's happening around the world, but I know it's happening in the United States and also in many places in Western Europe. You may be looking at the Donald Trump situation, but the things that people are reacting to are universal. People are looking for more responsible government. They're looking for a better say. They're looking to be heard, and they're looking for more opportunities. They're looking for more accountability with leaders. And so it's not all that unique to America. And so I think it's a good thing when we all start waking up and thinking we're all adults. How can we individually create a better society by being better people, setting better standards, and expecting better standards from those we put into office and those that we end up answering to in various positions?
Yeah, I totally agree. But, you know, America has never seen anything this phenomenal before. You know, we have never seen anything like this before. And a lot of us are just reacting to it as it pours out of Washington, D.C. And it's just, it's horrible. What can I tell you?
You know, let me just share with you what I got. I just got off a plane yesterday from, as I said, 21 days away out of the country. And actually, I was at an international event that had people from, I think, 50 countries. And here's what's interesting. Here in the States, we make it about Donald Trump. We do. We make it because Donald Trump is such an unusual character. Can I say anything more? He's highly unusual. He's colorful.
That's being
he's
nice.
Big. He's noticeable. But that's the way I am. I'm the ambassador of happiness. But the very issues people are grappling with here in the United States are the same issues they are grappling with overseas. And it's just that here they make it all about Donald Trump. But the issues of, you know, are we represented properly? Do we have a voice? Is our government answerable to us? Pardon?
I said the issues are the same.
You'd be surprised. And you know what? Even when it comes to things with security, I will tell you, security is ramped up overseas, just like we talk about, you know, security here. And is there going to be terrorism? Where is it coming from? And do we have groups of people that are working together or working against one another? I could also tell you things with the media and what the media does report and what it doesn't report is also happening overseas. So it's so easy for us here to make it about Donald Trump. But what I would say is that Donald Trump is a personality I don't want to say he's riding the coattails of a lot of people that are looking for change, whether change is good, bad, or otherwise, but because the man is so, I don't want to say outrageously, amazingly, highly charged as a personality, he becomes the face of people's emotions here in America, where in other countries, they just react individually about what's going on. So I watch these things all the time, but I see people all of a sudden waking up to say, we want a better government. We want to have people that are more responsible and answerable to us. We want a society that's got a better standard. And what I always say is that, you know, let it start with us and let us wake up and expect better and also be better people.
Yeah, that's one of my mottos is the man in the mirror. If you want to make the world a better place, look at yourself and make that change or something.
I love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, about this. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
You're asking me the question, but I could say this. You know, when you talk about the man in the mirror, the books I wrote called The Art of Happiness that all talk about common things we deal with in life. The subtitle is See Yourself and Be Yourself. They're all an invitation for people to be the example of what they want to see in the world. Most of us, whether it's, you know, we could look at the newspapers, sometimes we could look at our bosses, we could look at government leaders, we could look at banking leaders, we could look at a lot of things and think, those people are not doing a good job. Get them out of office. But what we don't do sometimes is say, what about me? Where do I go every day? Who do I talk to? How do I comport myself? How do I treat other people? And when we're willing to do that, we not only raise the standard, but then we also help extend the standard for other people. And I think it's very, very powerful.
Yeah, I think what you just said is powerful. Can you tell us a little bit more about your book, Living Happy Inside Out?
Well, I have six books that are under that Art of Happiness series. They talk about things like, what are our values in life? They talk about stepping out of our own comfort zones and becoming our bigger self, maybe pursuing dreams or aspirations we always had, but maybe we're afraid to do, and getting unstuck from mental places we've been in. I talk about things like, how do we compete with other people in good ways and making ourselves the only person we compete with so that we become a better person rather than using competition as a means of walking over other people. But you know, George, I have something that's even better than that. That's worth sharing because I am so passionate about a better society. And this is something I have spoken about, I want to say over a dozen times in seven countries over the past 18 months or so, is helping people to step up and rise up to the next level, regardless of what their background is.
Yes,
and I have it all in a course, and it's an e-course. Mm-hmm. called Foundations of Happiness. So I talk about our source and identity, like where do we find our identity? Where do we get the cues from? I talk about our mental backdrops and how oftentimes we have these belief systems that sabotage us and sabotage our lives. I talk about things like forgiving ourselves and forgiving other people, reconstructing our lives and being people of gratitude. I talk about personal responsibility, and then I talk about pursuing our destiny. And every
wow, where
time,
can we? I wanted to say, where can we find this information? Yeah, where we can get it. It sounds great. We want it.
You can find it on my website, which is my name. It's Maura, M as in Mary, A-U-R-A, the number 4,
yeah,
the Maura. Letter U.com. Maura4U.com. And
okay.
It's under courses. And it's the Foundations of Happiness course. And I will tell you, for anybody who feels like they're a victim, for anybody who feels like they don't like their life or they don't like the world they're living in, this is a course designed to turn everything on its head and help people become powerful.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds great. All right, folks, if you're listening out there, I mean, I want to say to the folks out there, if you're listening, and I hope you are, check this out. It sounds something that is that we need, that everybody needs, especially if you're feeling down and you're not happy and you want to be happy. Check this out. Go right ahead.
You know what? And it's loaded with videos, stories,
yeah,
things to listen to. And it's like one of those things that is as deep as you want to get and as high as you want to go in your life. This will
yeah.
help you get there. And the reason why it's so powerful, though, is because it's all based on life stories. And do you ever hear somebody else say,
yeah,
well, let me give you the 10 ways to be successful in life. And it's a checkoff list. And we're like, okay, sure. And I'm going to forget what you told me. But when people hear stories, they start
mm-hmm.
to step into them. And they read their
yeah.
own life details into those stories. And it helps
yeah.
them change their place in reality and the way in which they see reality. And I'm very
wow.
partial to it because it took me 50 years of life to come up with these stories. And they're just very powerful for anybody who wants to step out of where they've been, how to undo that feeling of being a victim. If somebody's been medicating themselves on drugs, alcohol, or even destructive behaviors, and they don't know why, these are a lot. There's a lot in this course that helps people get out of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The biggest thing of all, I'm going to tell you this. What I believe, George, is that most people are looking outside for answers. And I try to encourage people to go inside. I have this quote. It says, what if everything you've been searching for in life has been hiding inside your heart all along? And that's
yeah,
what
I totally agree
people
with that.
To do.
Maura, I totally agree with that because people are looking outside for anything to better their lives instead of looking inside. You're correct on that. I've had that experience with people, and it's all about the internal.
Yeah.
So, Maura, tell us where we can find your book. Tell us where we can find your books.
Okay, you could find my books
right
on my website. You could find my course on the website. You could find my podcasts, my blogs, all on my website, which is Maura, M as in Mary, A-U-R-A, the number 4 and the letter U, MauraForYou.com, because I'm always for you, whoever you are and wherever you are and wherever you live.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to check out your podcast. I mean, you have won me over. What can I say?
George, you're very funny. Well,
you have. I'm serious, and I'm pretty sure you've won a lot of listeners over too. And
I have.
I'm going to give you the last word.
Okay, if the human race knew where we were going, wouldn't we have arrived by now? Think about how long the human race has been running after its own tail. I offer people an opportunity to go within, and instead of being a follower, to go inside
yourself
and to rise up into their best and highest version of being a person of influence, leadership, and purpose. And just, George, like you said, you are making the world a better place one show at a time. I make the world a better place one blog, book, podcast, and course at a time. So thank you so much for having me on tonight. I really appreciate this.
No problem. What time do you podcast? What time can, let's say if someone like me wanted to check you out on your podcast, what time should I probably call okay. in to tune in to listen?
All right. Well, unlike you, you have automatic podcasts that go on live at a certain time. Mine are all pre-recorded,
yeah.
but people can
okay.
find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Google, but they can easily find them if they go onto my website. And all they have uh-huh. to do is sign on, and then every time a new one comes out, which is generally like one a week or so,
okay.
and they will get
okay.
this question. Little story, call to action, and finally somebody at the very end who shares with from the inside out too. So I would love to have your listeners and you check out Maura Sweeney Living Happy Inside Out podcast.
Hey, I sure will do it, and I hope everybody's listening to do the same thing. And Maura, thanks for being on the show. You've been a breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you so much, and you keep getting rid of the hate, having no home in at least Chicago and hopefully the rest of the world too, and make the world a better place. And thanks again so much, George, for having me on.
I hope we can talk again. All right. Bye-bye.
Sounds good. Me too. Bye-bye.
All righty. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, that was great. That was Maura. She was great. Check out the what she does and what she do. And if you didn't get that information, always rewind the show once it's recorded, and it will be there.
During an interview with Politico that was posted online this week, White House advisor, White House aide, whatever you want to call her, White House spokesperson maybe, Kellyanne Conway.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
Today, the president will release his full budget for fiscal year 2018. From all indications, the Trump budget will seek deep cuts to programs that help the middle class and working America while providing more handouts for the rich. It will cut to the bone programs that help the elderly, the poor, while adding money for an unnecessary, ineffective border wall that continues to have bipartisan opposition. And to make all of the math work, the Trump budget makes entirely unfounded assumptions about economic growth. In short, the Trump budget takes a sledgehammer to the middle class and the working poor, lavishes tax breaks on the wealthy, and imagines all of the deficit problems away with fantasy math. The Trump budget exists somewhere over the rainbow, where the dreams of Mick Mulvaney, Paul Ryan, and the Koch brothers really do come true. Of course, these dreams are a nightmare for the average working American. We expect the Trump budget will make deep cuts to the National Institute of Health and Centers for Disease Control. Let me ask, how many people in America want to cut cancer research when it's done such good? Well, President Trump evidently does. It's his budget. They kneecap research that develops new cures, damaging our ability to contain or prevent the outbreak of disease. We're all living longer and healthier, in part because of this research. We want to stop it, cut it back, so we can give tax breaks to wealthy people who, God bless them, are doing great already. We expect the Trump budget will gash programs like Meals on Wheels. I even read in the paper this morning that the head of the Freedom Caucus said that even for him, some of these cuts were too great. The SNAP benefits, helping making sure no kid goes to bed hungry in America. This is America. We've always done this. And the Children's Health Insurance Program, cruelly ripping away the lifelines from Americans who need the most, the children, the working poor, the elderly. We expect the Trump budget will cut transportation funding, education funding, and programs that help students repay their student loan debt. One of the great problems in America, the debt on the backs, the burden of average kids getting out of college, middle-class kids. We're going to make it harder? What is going on here? What is going on in the White House with this kind of budget? Our college kids, when they get out, they need to be able to live real good lives and not have this burden of debt on their shoulders, which they're struggling under now, and we're going to make it worse. We also, this is amazing, but true, the Trump budget will break President Trump's promise to protect Social Security and Medicaid from cuts, both of them. He promised over and over again he wouldn't cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Medicare is not cut here, but Medicaid is, and Social Security is. On Social Security, the budget will cut Social Security disability benefits to many Americans who have earned them and paid for those benefits. And you can say, well, doesn't cut old age benefits for the elderly. Wait. If they get away with this, the elderly will be next on the chopping block, because the goal, it seems, of this budget is cut everything you can so you can give even more tax breaks to the wealthiest people. The Koch brothers type of thinking. It will also seek hundreds of billions of dollars, additional cuts in Medicaid. The budget cuts Medicaid on top of the cuts that were made in the House bill of Trump Care. And what'll that do? Medicaid has become a middle-class program. 60% of the people in nursing homes, Medicaid funds it. What are we going to tell a couple with three kids? Say they're 40 or 45. They have three kids. They're saving for college. They're struggling. But at least they know that mom or dad who needs help is in a nursing home. This budget passes, that family is going to have a terrible choice. Take hundreds of dollars a month out of their own budget and give it to pay for the nursing home, or find a place for mom and dad to live, maybe at home, but maybe there's no room in the house. Awful. That's what they're doing. And who else will it hurt? Opioid addiction. Much of our progress that we're trying to make on opioid addiction comes through Medicaid. Because they give treatment. We need both law enforcement. I'm a tough law enforcement guy. You know that. But we also need treatment. I've had fathers cry in my arms because their sons, in this case it was both sons, were waiting online for treatment and died of an overdose. What a burden a parent has to live with. We should cut that and cut it to give more tax breaks to the rich. It's in America turned upside down, this budget. And how about rural areas? You know, I represent New York State. It's known for its big city, New York City. We have other great cities upstate. But we also have the third largest rural population in America. So I'm very familiar with rural America. In many of my counties in upstate New York, and this is true throughout rural counties, throughout America, the largest employer is the rural hospital. And that hospital is the only hospital around for miles and miles and miles if, God forbid, you have a stroke and you've got to be rushed there to get yourself better. Well, go talk to our rural hospitals. These rural hospitals, which are the beating heart of our local economy, employing hundreds, sometimes even thousands of people. Well, nearly one in three rural hospitals today are at risk of closure. It's more expensive to run a rural hospital. People in rural areas are entitled to the same health care, so that means buying all these fancy machines. In an urban area, those machines can run 24/7 and get the reimbursement back, but in a rural area, they can't. There's not that many people. But they get some help. The Trump cuts to Medicaid would cause a whole bunch of these rural hospitals to close and many more to lay off employees, hurting health care in rural America, hurting jobs in rural America, places that need help. The Trump budget, on top of Trump Care, which seeks more than $800 billion in cuts to Medicaid, would decimate health care options.
Mr. President.
Senator from California.
Senator Carper, it's interesting. You talked about Tanzania. It reminds me of a greeting that I've often heard from people who live in various African countries. You've probably heard it. But when you meet someone for the first time, instead of what we would normally say, pleased to meet you, the greeting back is, I see you. I see you. And I think that really is part of our concern here. Do we see the people who will be impacted in the way that they are actually living their lives? And do we understand, if we see them, that this bill will not be in their best interests? And right now, for example, we know 13 senators, all Republicans, are crafting a bill, and this bill would restructure our nation's entire health care system, which, when you add up what Americans can spend on hospitals, doctors, prescription drugs, and all the rest, we understand that it makes up 1/6 of our economy. It would affect the lives of everyone. Our parents, grandparents, those who are in need of caregiving, our children struggling with asthma or opioid abuse, our spouses who may be battling cancer. And what is equally distressing is that this bill is being written in secret. The chairman of the Finance Committee says he has not seen the bill. The Secretary of Health and Human Services says he has not seen the bill. The American people, the people we all represent, have certainly not seen the bill. Well, I think the American people deserve better. This bill is being written entirely along partisan lines without any attempt to bring Democrats on board. And the American people deserve better. This bill is being written and rushed through the Senate with hardly any time to debate the cost or the details of this proposal. And the American people deserve better. Now, I remember when our colleagues across the aisle said the Affordable Care Act was being rammed down the American people's throats in the middle of the night. Well, the ACA went, in fact, through 106 public hearings. It incorporated more than 170 Republican amendments. The whole process took an entire year. But this health care plan involves no hearings, no bill text, and no transparency at all. As United States Senators, we were sent here to represent the American people. Represent the American people. We answer to the American people. So why are my colleagues from across the aisle trying to put one over on the American people? I've met folks all across California and this country, and they see
they
what's
are.
Happening. They know that if this bill were as wonderful as its proponents would like us to believe, it would be out in the open. The American people deserve greater transparency. But even though the authors of this proposal have tried to conceal the details of their plan, we know enough to know this bill would be nothing short of a disaster. We know because we've been told that it's about 80% the same as the bill that was passed by the House, a bill so catastrophic that even the President of the United States, who hailed its passage, now calls it, quote, mean. We know that it would throw 23 million Americans off their health insurance within a decade, including putting 4 to 5 million Californians at risk of losing coverage. We know it would raise costs for middle-class families and seniors. In every county of California, average monthly premium costs would go up, while financial support to pay premiums would fall. We know it would put Americans with pre-existing conditions at risk and leave people who need maternity care or opioid treatment without coverage or force them to pay huge out-of-pocket costs. We know it would cut about $834 billion from Medicaid, which means less money for families to pay for nursing homes, to support children with special needs, or to treat substance abuse. Bless you. And that is another reason we need the Affordable Care Act to be in place.
All right. The new GOP health bill could allow cheaper plans with fewer benefits. The GOP, they've just crafted another health care bill. This could be the third or fourth time they've crafted a bill that most Americans will still be screwed over. Medicaid. The Medicaid cuts where 22 million, what the hell difference, will be thrown off their health care. It's already been revised, and they're going to vote on it, I believe, sometime next week, if not earlier. It's just awful, and a lot of senators are opposing it already. Susan Collins, I believe she's Senator of Maine. I think she's opposing it. And a lot of people are opposing it. I mean, they just tweaked it a little bit. That's all they've done. They're going to throw all these people off their coverage, going to make it harder to get coverage, going to make it cheaper, but less benefits. That's crazy. And these Republicans in office, current crop of fools that we have in Congress, they care nothing about the American people. They it seems, do not want you to go to a doctor. This should not be called a health care bill. It should be called a death bill, because that's what it is. It's hurting seniors, disabled, children with cancer and other kinds of diseases. Okay, the updated Senate health care bill keeps original sharp Medicaid cuts, includes Cruz Amendment, adds money to state stabilization funds, maintain taxes on the wealthy Americans, boosts funding to combat opioid crisis. Yeah, it's those are five sticking points in this new revised bill. It keeps original sharp Medicaid cuts. That means you will be thrown off your coverage. You will no longer receive coverage. How in the hell is this a revised health care bill when you're keeping in cuts that Americans opposes? This is crazy. you know, they want people to die. They don't care. These are rich, old, rich white men. Okay, I'm not racist, but I'm just being real, who are crafting this bill. They're crafting the bill. I mean, they're making these old rich white men are making decisions on women's health, making decisions on your and my life. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. They unveiled their alternative idea, which is this revised health care plan. Senate Republicans unveiled their newest health care bill Thursday, which is today. You podcasting this show later, you know that it's an earlier show. As they continue to search for the majority needed to repeal and replace Obamacare. They can repeal and replace Obamacare all they want, but they don't have to throw so many people off their health care, women, children, seniors, the elderly. And these people would do it and not give a damn about the consequences. Now it's up to the senators to decide if they like it. But I can tell you this. The majority of those senators, they have constituency. They have voters. Their voters don't like it. So I'm assuming that the majority of these senators will not like it. Their voters don't like it. The people of their states who they represent do not like this bill. I don't have to talk to them. I know it. I can see it at these town hall meetings that these guys go to. Where their constituency are just so pissed off at this, and they're pissed off at Donald Trump. Majority of the people in some of these town hall meetings, they want Donald Trump out of the Oval Office. But their representative, the guy who they hired to do these type of jobs, they're not doing it. They're not doing it. So it is up to the senators to decide if they like it. Donald Trump can't wait to get a bill that he can sign. He don't give a damn what it is. He doesn't care how it's crafted or how much has been revised. He just wants something to sign so he can have a win to go in his column, because he has nothing. He's been in office 6 months, 7 months maybe, and he has nothing legislatively accomplished, period. Nothing. So he's eager to sign something. You know, he doesn't care what it is, long as it's a bill, you know, and hopefully as long as it's throwing millions and millions of people off their health care. And they go after if this bill's passed, and I don't think it's going to pass because it's too many people opposing it. American people, not these jerk off senators that we have trying to screw up America, but grassroots people don't like this. They can't stand it. And they have been letting their voices known by, you know, taking up refuge inside some of these congressmen's and senators' offices on Capitol Hill. And they know it. They know it. One of the things about Donald Trump, he doesn't give a shit if everybody's, pardon my language, but he doesn't give a care if everybody, if each one of us in America lost health care, he doesn't give a damn. You know, because he's rich, he's a billionaire, he's going to have his health care. They're going to, you know, false teeth, false hip, false back, whatever. He can afford all of this, false legs. He can afford all of that. New hair, you know, he can afford all of that because he has great Medicare. He has great, great health care. He has great health care. They all do. And a lot of these guys have great health care because we voted for them and we gave them the job to have great health care. How many people on Medicaid vote? They throw 32,000. If they throw 32 million people off Medicaid, that's 32 million votes they will not get. Maybe they didn't think of it that way. Maybe they just don't care. Maybe they know it and just don't care. And I'm thinking the latter. I'm thinking that they just don't care. These people don't care. And that's why I say it's probably going to be a tsunami in November, next November, 2018. It's going to be a tsunami of people voting, especially if these people get kicked off Medicaid by these rich white old men in Congress. It's going to be a tsunami at the ballot box. Obviously, they don't care. And if Donald Trump is still president by then, he will not have a majority in Congress. And by him not having a majority in Congress anymore after November 2018, he is subject to be impeached by the Democratic-controlled Congress. Because these guys aren't doing it. Donald Trump, I've said this before on the show, Donald Trump is going to do something really, really catastrophic to America and Americans. And it's going to be the fault of the Republicans in Congress because they didn't do anything about this nightmare that we have in office. If this would have been a Democrat, let's say Obama, Hillary, they'd have been out so fast, it would have made your head swim. And it wouldn't have taken as much garbage as Donald Trump has bestowed upon America. It's just awful. And the majority of people and the majority of voters in the United States, they're saying to themselves and to their friends, why aren't these Republicans about Donald Trump? They're aiding and abetting him. They're making excuses of keeping him in office. Even some of the awful things that he's done, some of his tweets and things he's getting caught up in, they are looking the other way. They're saying, well, yeah, we know it's bad. We know we don't like what he's doing. We don't like his tweets. There's plenty of evidence of Russia meddling. There's plenty of evidence of Donald Trump and his gang colluding with the Russians. There's plenty of evidence that this guy is a sexual assaulter, by his own words, by words of others who know him a lot better. But these Republicans will not do anything about this guy. Why? Because they want to try and get some kind of agenda through. They need him to get some kind of an agenda through that they want. They need him to get their legislation through Congress. Hell, you can impeach him and put Mike Pence in and get your legislation through with Mike Pence. But on the other hand, Mike Pence may be thrown out of office also because he has been caught in a few lies. He hasn't done his damn job. That's why Mike Pence is in hiding, it seems like. Because the investigation that's now into the Trump administration and it's going strong, and there's more evidence that is being provided to the FBI special counselor Robert Mueller, is damaging. But they need Donald Trump. They need Donald Trump. We don't need him. The American people don't want him, but they want him. They want Donald Trump. That's why Donald Trump is still there. Donald Trump should have been out of that damn office 3 or 4 months ago, even if not sooner. If it would have been a Democrat, hey, they'd have been gone. If it had been a Democrat with this Republican-controlled Congress, the Democrat would have been out on his ass. Nothing said. But like I said, Mike Pence Vice President Mike Pence is keeping a low profile because he knows that he's a part of this investigation that the FBI, Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is doing. So he's keeping a low profile. What cracks me up about Mike Pence, he tries to be Mr. Nice Guy. He tries to be above it all. And he's the biggest thief. He's the biggest crook of them all. The biggest crook of them all. That's why you don't see him. However, you know, we're all just going to have to see what this investigation pans out. What's going to come out on this investigation? You know, and I think that's why Pence is lying low, because he's involved. He's involved some way. I think everybody around Trump, everybody that in his administration, most people in his administration, especially the people in his circle, colluded with Russia. His son came out and admitted that he colluded with Russia, Donald Trump Jr., as you probably heard. He came out and admitted it. And there was proof through emails. Emails. So Donald Trump cannot say this is fake news. He cannot say somebody's out to try to get him. If anybody's out to try to get Donald Trump, it's his own son. His son met with Russians, along with Kushner, Metaphor, and was it Jeff Sessions? Oh, we know Jeff Sessions met with the Russians. They're all lying. So the best thing we can do, folks, right now is probably waiting until this investigation is over, and the rock is going to fall somewhere. I just know it's going to fall somewhere, and there's going to be more salacious information coming out of the Trump White House, because it never stops. It never ends. And the way these people act, they act as if they're guilty. Trump act as if he's guiltier than sin. They act like they're guilty. Obstructing justice. I mean, why would you obstruct justice if you are innocent, if you didn't do anything? Obstructing justice tells you right then and there, tells everybody actually, that you're guilty. You know, and we just have to wait and see what else comes out of this White House. And we're just going to have to wait on that, conclusion of the Russia investigation by special counselor of the FBI, Justice Department, Robert Mueller. Hopefully some good stuff is going to come out of that. We'll be right back. Hey there, friends and fans. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want you to enjoy my fictional writings located on Amazon and elsewhere. The website is www.amazon.com/author/GWilder, or go to the Amazon website and type my name in the text bar above to either order or download a book, a story, essays, novels, novelettes, whatever you want to do. And I want to thank you very much for that. And as always, good reading. This is George Wilder Jr. And keep listening. There's always more to come. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Making the world a better place, one show at a time.
All right. Pre-existing con artists. I'm looking at Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, two senators in Congress. And they're smiling like Cheshire cats. The new health care bill proves GOP promise on pre-existing conditions were never serious. They were lies. If you have medical problems, this proposal, and that's all it is, a proposal, it's not law, it's a proposal, will not be good for you. But the Republicans in Congress think it is good for you. They think it's great. Anytime the Republicans think something is great for you and I, it's not. It's not. The big change in the new Senate Republican health care proposal is, as expected, an amendment that has potential to undermine current protections for pre-existing conditions. So if you're sick already, you're screwed if this bill passes the Senate, this health care bill. Yes, that's despite the promises, plural, Republican leaders have made over and over to treat those protections as. And that's what the Republicans do. They lie. They make promises. They said, hey, wow, you pre-existing conditions, you're going to be taken care of. Now they've taken that provision out of the proposed health care bill. They're liars. What can I say? If you're sick already, it doesn't matter. You get cancer, diabetes, you're being treated for it. That's a pre-existing condition. And you're screwed with this proposed health care revised document that they're going to try and pass. And Donald Trump is so eager to sign it. I don't think it's going to pass. I don't think it's going to pass. If this thing doesn't pass, then Obamacare lives. But they're going to keep on trying until they get rid of Obamacare. And it they're surprised that it's taken so long right now to repeal it. Okay, I believe Senator Chuck Schumer is speaking on this latest revised health care bill. I'm pretty sure he doesn't like it. I don't like it. I've just read a few things about it. Some of this bill was crafted and revised in secret, and that's a damn shame that these people in Congress trying to put one over on us, the American people, crafting a bill in secret, hoping that we're distracted by Donald Trump's scandals and distractions, his scandals and distractions, that we will not pay attention to these clowns doing this bill in secret, secretly trying to throw people off their health care. It's just awful what they're trying to do. And people are pissed off about it. And they are making their voices known and heard. And that's what this show is all about. The disabled, people with pre-existing conditions, people on Medicaid, they are going to be thrown the hell off. I don't see where this revised bill is anything better than the last bill. They tweaked it here and there. They made put another dot or crossed another T here or there. But basically, from what I understand and from what I'm getting, it's the same old rotten bill that they're going to try and pass. But they can't pass this if they don't think they have the votes for it. They'll delay it again and try to tweak it again. Then they're going to come up. They're not going to kill it altogether, because killing it altogether means failing to repeal Obamacare. And that's been one of their main points, Donald Trump's main points, and the Republicans in Congress. It's been one of their main points is to kill Obamacare. Matter of fact, what they really want to do, they want to get rid of Obama's legacy, period. And now they're going after Martin Luther King's legacy, Donald Trump. That is not going to happen. That will never happen.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Everybody, for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guests who have appeared on the show all week. I want to thank Maura for coming on the show today and discussing Living Happy Inside Out. I think she was great. I think she was marvelous. Go check books. And thanks, everybody. Check me out next week. We're going to have some great guests. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care. Have a great weekend. Bye.